Diane, I have found that mainstream science continues to poo-poo, dismiss, ignore psychic phenomena, even though some mainstream scientists are slowly coming over individually. In terms of the mass scientific audience, the studies and everything else, they don't touch this with a 10-foot pole. How come?
They don't because of the fact that it's a real career killer. They really don't want to risk losing their tenure. If you pursue something that is not within the mainstream paradigm, it's a great risk. But John Mack went through tremendous
difficulty. Oh, he sure did.
As a result of his book.
I mean, his friends and colleagues, they all thought the world of him, but publicly, they kind of wanted to stay away. I mean, privately, John Mack, we love you. You're our friend. We're going to stand with you. But publicly, a lot of them did not, Diane. I mean, when he got involved in the alien abduction phenomenon, they just kind of backed off. And I would guess the same thing would happen to you or any other mainstream doctor scientist who decides, you know what, there's something to this. We don't know what it is, and we're going to study it. You're right. Mainstream backs off in a big way. That's unfortunate.
Right. It's very unfortunate because I really believe that the way that science evolves is when you look at the data and you make your conclusions based on the data rather than worrying about whether or not it fits the current theory. Otherwise, science stays stagnant.
Your book, which we'll get into a lot next hour as well, the ESP Enigma, the scientific case for psychic phenomena. Give me your overall impressions of what you started to study with this.
I need you to narrow that question down just a little bit.
It covers what?
What does my book cover?
Mm-hmm.
I tried to put everything in there that I thought that people needed in order for them to have an understanding of how psychic phenomena such as telepathy and precognition could exist in this world. Because although many of us will, if we think about it, will be able to come up with some example of something that is could fall into that category. But because of the fact that it is not what we're taught in school, because of the fact that we only see the world really, you know, through our senses, we aren't able to see it in a we aren't able to see it at the, you know, quantum physics level, for example.
We're looking at it through a different prism, aren't we?
We are, and because of that, a lot of people just dismiss those things. Just like I did with the person who was able to read that book. I mean, there was a part of me that was blown away by it, but there was also a part of me that just had to shelf it because I didn't know what to do with it. And I think that this book was necessary for people, not just lay people, and I wrote it for lay people, but also for scientists. It's necessary for them to have information that comes from neuroscience, that comes from genetics, physics, parapsychology, various fields, because nobody seems to really have synthesized all of that information into one book. People are so specialized today that it seems like there really isn't enough being done to present a whole picture. So that's really what I tried to do in this book.
Are you now staunchly a believer in psychic phenomena?
I would have to say that I am, but I don't like the word staunchly.
Because you sound like you were hesitating a little bit.
Yeah, it's just that I don't like the word staunchly.
I don't use it very often.
Yeah.
Want me to change it? Are you a huge believer in psychic? I know what you mean.
I have become a believer, for sure. But the problem I have with staunchly is that I think it's a problem if you become too invested in any particular viewpoint,
mm-hmm.
that you looking at anything else that comes along.
Has this taken you, just when you were dealing with ESP, for example, has this taken you into a belief system of life after death, telekinesis, telepathy, and everything else?
I would say that I have explored the issue of life after death. That's another very, very fascinating topic, and it's actually one that I'm going to have to address in another book. There just wasn't enough room in this book to address that. But it, in my explorations, it really did make me think about that question, absolutely, and I do have another book in me about that.
Let me be formal for a moment. Dr. Powell, tell us, which sounds very formal too, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us the method that you used to begin investigating ESP for the work and the research you did in the ESP Enigma.
Well, first of all, what I did was that I wanted to see what others have done. I wanted to see what research was out there. And what I found was that there is a lot of research that's already been done. Over the past 100 years, there have been many people who have, like myself, have been from traditional science backgrounds, and they had something happen that made them become interested in ESPs. Like you mentioned that you had a relative. I found that, like, for example, the person who invented the EEG, which is what we use to measure brain waves.
Right.
It's used clinically all the time. Well, he invented it because he thought it would help him to prove ESP. And it was after he'd had an experience in which he was in a very, he was in a near-fatal accident, and his sister telegrammed him right afterwards, wondering if he was okay because she had this feeling that something had happened to him. And he thought that that was so uncanny. Her timing was just so impeccable. He thought there's got to be some way in which we are transmitting signals to one another. And that's actually the origin of the invention of the EEG, which is used to this day. It didn't prove telepathy, but it's been an instrument that's been used to actually show that people who are in telepathic contact will frequently synchronize their brainwaves with one another.